TheDigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, Show 136, Thursday, 20th of December. Dixon, and welcome to the Christmas edition of the show. This week, gadget fan and Windows Mobile MVP Stephen Hughes returns to the show to talk about gadgets for the holiday season, including Media Center remotes, AV receivers, wireless USB servers, Zooms, and many other gadgets, including the Amazon Kindle. We talk about all sorts of different gadgets and fun stuff for Christmas. News items, an update on the Media Center Health Monitor program, an update on the Media Center Show Awards. Welcome to the show. This is the pre-Christmas and the final show of 2007. So I hope if you're listening to this before Christmas, you have a good Christmas. And if you're catching up after Christmas, I hope you enjoy your Christmas or whatever festivities you had. I just want to take this opportunity as well to say thanks for the support to all listeners of the show. As I say on previous shows, I couldn't do the show without you. And since launching the show on digitallifestyle.com back in February, we've picked up a lot of listeners. So thanks very much for your loyalty. So I'm going to go more or less straight to the interview, but got a couple of news items I wanted to mention. One is an interesting video on 10.net, which is Microsoft's site, and there's a nice video on there showing Steve Lindsay from Microsoft showing his Media Center system. He shows off how he uses WebGuide, four tuner system including ATSC and digital tuners, Windows Home Server, even some custom applications that he's written for streaming DivX files. It's a nice video that really shows the potential of Media Center and just using existing components and existing technology. I'm going to actually be getting Steve onto the show in the new year to talk about the video. In fact, Steve's got a blog as well on Channel 10 about Media Center, so I'll include a link for that in the show notes. And Steve's actually a fellow Brit. Now, Ginsborough has posted some details on the release version of Big Screen Photos version 2. It looks a stunning application, a really visual application. It works with Vista, the 64-bit and 32-bit versions, and the Xbox 360 Extender. On the blog post that Niall's put, he's got some of the details of what the new features are. It's a great photo application for Media Center, and as ever, now produce some great-looking applications. And it's the first time he's mentioned the price, actually. It's going to be $24.95 US dollars, which I think is pretty reasonable, actually. I know the amount of time that goes into making a good-looking Media Center markup application. I've done some development recently for the Media Center Health project, and you know, it's a vast amount of time just to get a basic application up and running, and now just put a lot of time and put a lot of effort into the application, so I think that is a really good value. In fact, he's looking for testers to try his online registration process. And there's a 30-day free trial going to be available soon as well. So have a look at the link in the show notes for more details. And I'll try and catch up with Niall on the show, and we'll talk about Big Screen Photos too at a later date. Now, many of you have been following Chris Lanier's coverage of Cable Card from Dell. And he's got a really nice Q&A up on his blog, going through all the sort of questions that he's had sent in about Cable Card specific to the Dell, and I think Dell worked with him on answering some of the questions. So have a look at the link for that in the show notes, and if you're interested in Cable Card, it's definitely something to look out for. Okay, now an update on Media Center Health Monitor. As I mentioned last week, I've done quite a lot of work on this over the past week. It's one of those applications that's really addictive, and I've got to try and stay off it more than keep adding features. But I've more or less completed the web service side of it now. So what you have is there's three components now. There's the main Media Center Health Checker, which runs on your Media Center PC. monitors important aspects of Media Centre, including disk space, recording services, and any events like a program recorded okay or a program didn't record. And it has a like a health indicator on that. Then there's a Media Centre UI, so you can view this information, the health information from Media Centre. Now this is a kind of experimental stage at the moment, but there is an add-on that you can install that enables that function. At the moment it's the main Media Centre system only, not on for extenders, and that's purely down to some of the security elements that that Vista puts in to keep the system locked down, that's kind of preventing me from working on the extenders, but I'll work around that. And then the third component is the web interface. This is where you can tell your health system on your local machine to update its health to a web service on the internet, which is on the digitallifestyle.com. And then you can go to the digitallifestyle.com and browse the and have a look at the health and the events. So let's say you're out for a couple of days, you're working away or whatever, and you want to check that your Media Centre system at home is okay. You can check its health, you can check its the disk space is not dropped below the threshold you preset, and also what events have occurred, so you can see what programs have recorded and if any have failed. And you can do it with multiple systems as well. You can have as many systems as you want, and you put it under your account, and you can view them all through the web interface. Plus, it will also send you alerts as well. You can set it to send you an alert if one of the service stops, or if a program fails to record, it will send you an email. And I'm going to be looking at expanding that further to maybe using something like the Windows Live Alerts, but at the moment it's using email. The whole suite is open for beta testing at the moment. So you've got to go on to health.thedigitallifestyle.com. You've got to create an account. That sends me an email. I reply back and activate your account. And then you're free to download the software and start uploading the data. You don't have to use the web service, you can just use the Windows version if you want, but the web service is nice, and I am looking for testing that. I had a few sort of international type issues with dates and things like that, but they seem to be all worked out now. So if you want to test the application, you can either send me an email, beta@thedigitallifestyle.com, or just go on to health.thedigitallifestyle.com, create an account, and that will automatically send an email. I think some of the emails are getting trapped by spam filters, so just double check that you get the email and drop me a line if you create an account and it doesn't send you an email. CS is coming up in January. I think we'll have a show out before then, but just want to remind any listeners that are going to CS, drop me a line if you want to say hello and meet up. We should be possibly organising something on the Wednesday evening at CES with a few other Media Centre enthusiasts and maybe MVPs and some OEMs and software vendors. So drop me a line, Ian, at thedigitallifestyle.com. And finally, I want to mention the Media Centre Show Awards. The vote's still open. It's going to be closing on the 2nd of January, so there's still time to vote. And fantastic response. I can't wait to analyse the data. There's just a huge amount of votes on there. And also you've got the software and hardware giveaway from the likes of VideoBox, One Voice and Embedded Automation. So seeing as this is coming festive season now, the show's going to be taking a break. I'll be back with the pre-CES show on Thursday the 3rd of January. So now time for a break. I'll be back with Stephen Hughes.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on OneVoice's Media Center Communicator, MC Each Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. OneVoice offers licenses for MCE Speech Tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Steve Hughes, welcome back to the Media Centre Show.
Hi, Ian. Thanks for having me back. And we're going to do a little bit different today. Because it's coming up, the holiday season and Christmas is coming up, there's so many gadgets and toys and things out there that I thought we'd sort of chat through some of the things that have caught your eye, and the things that could be on the shopping list for Christmas presents. So before we get into that, just give us a quick recap. You've been on the show before, but just give a recap on who you are.
I'm Stephen Hughes. I'm a mobile devices MVP. I run some websites at Boston Pocket PC, and I also do a blog over at techchronicle.com. I'm going to be posting up some newer video reviews and some other stuff later on this year, if I can find the free time.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that you get these things for review, and then so much the recording was not too bad. It's the editing and getting uploaded and transcoded and all that kind of stuff that seems to take the time.
Exactly. Plus, I've had a second job. We've been doing an addition onto our house, so I've been doing some tech stuff, and I'll actually probably put up some photos and some how-tos and what I did to set up a whole home theater.
I think you touched on this on the show pretty last time you were on, wasn't it? You were doing some work then.
Yeah, I basically redid. We added an addition onto our house, so I added what we call our great room, which has like 9 overhead speakers in it, a drop-down projector, wall-mounted LCD display, and a nice audio-video closet stacked with some DVD changers.
Right, so talk us through some of the equipment that you put in there then. So you say you got a projector.
Yep, basically it's an old projector I've had for a while. It's an X1 in-focus projector, as I've had for a while, and I was going to upgrade once I had some more money readily available after doing this home upgrade ourselves, but I was going to wait on that, get an HDMI-compatible 1080p display. The screen I have, I just picked it up off of eBay, pretty cheap, you can find around. It was like $89, I think, with like $180 in shipping for an 11-foot diagonal screen.
And that right. I guess you can have any screen as long as it's a sort of a clear screen. It doesn't really matter. There's not really too much technical.
Well, there is. There are different types of screens out there with different materials on them. Some of them are gray, some are white, some are have like almost like a blackish tint. Some even have a bluish tint to it. And so there's really high end screens that are out there from made by like Stewart. And it's like AVS Forums has got some great what to look for when you're buying a screen. I mean, you can start off cheap and then work your way up depending on your budget. I basically just went with the cheap route. I can always upgrade later.
I think there's also, do some have different qualities on how they pass the sound through and if you've got rear speakers and things?
Right, because it also depends on the output of your sources. Some of them are optical, so you have a pure digital output, so you can do full DTS and Dolby surround sound, which a lot of media centers now have. They'll actually have the optical output from the sound card and some other devices too, like TiVos, Replay TVs. If you have those as well, those also have pass optical outputs, as well as some newer DVD players and HD DVD, and as well as Blu-ray.
Right, so in terms of your media center PC then, what have you gone for there?
I actually just built my own on that end. I was looking around trying to get something that had cable card compatibility, but I found it was easier for me to build a PC. It was cheaper as well, so I just basically threw in 4 terabyte drives, a standard motherboard, with a Core 2 processor, and I didn't want to overclock because I wanted to keep the heat down, because that was a major concern of mine. When you store something in an AV closet, you also have to consider cooling as well. Yeah, because those components do get very hot, and also you have to deal with sound levels.
Yeah. So that's an important consideration. I think when I built my media center PC sort of 2 years ago almost now, the parts of it are, I went for performance over sound, and I wish I'd gone the other way around, really.
Yeah, because it's like when you have to debate between either having an Xbox 360 and the that thing gets pretty loud, or a PC, and I actually found that the PC was actually quieter than the 360, which is a surprise to me.
Yeah, I built a home server from one of the Cube machines, and you can't hear that over. It's quieter than the Xbox, and it's quieter than my main media center PC. In fact, what I'd love to build is some kind of media center PC built off one of Tranquil's home servers case design, which are completely silent and fanless. I think that they'd make a good software, so with the software extender technology, if you had something like that, that'd make a great extender.
Oh, yeah. And another option, I know a few of my friends have done, they've actually taken old laptops and used those as media centers, and they just use an external tuner, which also supports ClearQuam, which is basically an unencrypted HDTV over cable. And they've filmed a lot of success with that because it basically has all the same components. They're using that HD Home Run as their dual tuner that can be shared over a network connection.
I did something similar. I think we might have mentioned it on the show last time. Actually, I had a laptop with a broken screen, and I've used that as a media center PC in the kitchen, just hooked a monitor up to it.
Yep, that's a great option as well. A lot of people use those for digital picture frames, too. If you have an old laptop, like the hinge might be broken on it. Some people have made frames out of them and stuck them in the wall.
Yeah, they're quite good components, aren't they? I guess the only thing is you want them to be sort of fairly powerful if you're going to do media center type stuff, and tend to be the old laptops are the ones that you can't run Vista, so you're kind of stuck with the older technology anyway.
Yeah, the old media center XP.
Yeah.
But that still works. I actually have one running like that too in our family room. And basically, I use a shared drive where it shares the media from my Vista-based system, so all the information is synced up. I can access it. Basically, it's running almost like an extender.
Yeah, which is where something we always mention is a software extender would work well for you then, wouldn't it? If you just had a light client that you could install on that machine that would take the Vista Media Center desktop.
Exactly. I mean, you could do remote desktop, but it doesn't quite do the same thing because you don't have the same exact. The video doesn't translate too well.
I mean, it does seem a shame that we haven't got that, but everybody holds out hope that we may one day see it in the future.
Yeah, we hope so, but it's almost cheaper now just to buy an extender than it is to build another PC.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, as we talk now, sort of beginning of December, they're still not available.
Yeah, there's supposed to be some new extenders coming onto the market from several different manufacturers that look to be pretty promising. And HP also made a recent announcement, too, with their televisions that you can actually upgrade their media-ready TVs to Media Center and run as an extender, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, that is nice. It'd just be nice to see. I just haven't seen that sort of function work yet. So we haven't seen it in a real-life product. We've only seen the announcement of it.
Yeah, they have a 42-inch and a 47-inch, and they'll probably have them on display at CES this year.
Yeah, hopefully. Now, we'll come back to CES as well, but other things that that you put in there. So you've got your media center PC hooked up to your projector, and you mentioned the audio equipment. What kind of audio equipment have you gone for?
I basically went with a Yamaha receiver. Basically, it's the RCX. I think it's the 2000 series. I can't even remember the model number myself. But basically, what I wanted it for was to be an HDMI switcher, so I could switch between different HDMI inputs. So I'll have my Xbox 360 on one input. You have your DVD player, another one, and the media center on another. I also have a replay TV cable input, all the different things, so I can switch between my inputs and I can display them. It also has on-screen controls as well, so I can see the volume controls, different speaker sounds you want to have for simulated surround sound. You also have those controls blow up on the screen. Also has internet podcast, so I actually listen to the media center show over the internet right through the receiver. You also
have pretty cool.
Yeah, and you also have some other cool things, too. It also supports, so you can stick a USB thumb drive into it, play any music that's on that thumb drive as well. And it also has a USB port on the front, so you also hook up any other USB players. An iPod has an iPod dock as well, or if you have a Zoom player, you can plug it into the USB port, and it'll actually see the music on it, and you can play it.
Oh, that's really cool. That's a nice device, that, rather than it being a sort of standalone component that doesn't sort of interact with the other stuff. It's nice that it's got that capabilities to work with the other devices like the Zoom.
Right, and another thing that I was looking for too, I wanted something so I could actually control the receiver through, let's say, your Media Center PC. So it has a serial port on the back, and there's some software that you can actually download from Yamaha. It'll actually allow you to control the receiver through your computer. So if you remote desktop into my Media Center PC, I actually control the whole system on, like I say, my pocket PC or an ultra mobile PC throughout the house, because it also supports different zones. So basically, I was looking at doing an option with the Sonos player, which supplies nice wireless zones in the areas where you basically put down as a little docking station, and it'll actually support the sound out to different speakers you have throughout your house. Since I already wired my house, I have wired for different zones from the receiver. So I have three different zones for outside on the deck and in the garden, backyard. I also have another zone in the house for our master bedroom, another zone for our living room, dining room, as well as the home theater area.
Right, and so that's all controlled by the Yamaha receiver.
Right, and you can each can listen to a different input too, which is kind of nice.
Oh, so you can route it. So you've got it can pick if you're in the room with your Zoom, you can pick that, but another zone can be listening to the media center output.
Right.
I guess then you could build some kind of automation into that, so that you can fire. So if you, say, play a movie from Media Center, then you can trigger the serial connection and the receiver to switch into the Media Center mode and sort of theater mode.
And I also have I control it all through a Harmony 890 RF remote control, which is a great gift item to give somebody, a remote control. Especially one that's programmable with macros.
Yeah, now talk about that. We'll get on to the gift items, because that is one for the, sort of the Media Center gadget lover. What is the Harmony remote?
Well, Harmony remote is a product from that actually got bought out by Logitech about 2 or 3 years ago. Basically, Harmony has a USB-based remote where it allows you to download all the codes. The problem a lot of people have when they have a universal remote control, they have a problem. They have to enter in all the different codes for all the different components and hopefully find the one that works with their device. What Harmony does, they actually have all of the device. You basically select a drop-down software menu on your computer. You program through a mini USB cable, and you can program each of your components. You also can program different activities, too. So if you want to say you want to watch a movie, what I do, I have it turn on, lower down my projector, I mean my screen, turn on my projector, turn on the audio input on my receiver and the video input, and it can also spool up my DVD changers that I have, or switch over to Media Center and play a DVD from my DVD changers on there.
And so that's all configurable through their software, is it, that controls it via USB?
Yep. And the nice thing about this remote control that I have, it also works through radio frequency. So let's say I have a zone up in my, actually have speakers in my bathroom above my shower. I have one built in there, and I have one above the vanity area. So I have, with the RF remote control, I can actually control the zone up there and play any audio source that I want.
So how does the RF signal translate then to an infrared signal, let's say, to control your TV, turning that on and off?
It has a special little adapter that actually works off of also gets programmed by USB. You'd pair it with your remote control. It has a separate audio adapter, so it has an IR sender. So you actually has the little eyes you can put on to control your devices, like on the Media Center. Has those you can put on your different components, or you can just put it like in front of all your components, and it has an RF receiver, so it receives the radio frequency from the remote and then translates it to IR. There's other products out on the market that do that as well, that you can use, like a PowerMid from X10 is also sold through here in the States through Radio Shack and Smart Home, and that basically does the same exact thing. That's about $50. I actually have a few of those as well.
So with the Harmony remote, then When you buy that, so you're going to buy that as a gift, you get the remote and the USB connection, the software, and then do you need to buy anything else to make that work with all your different devices?
Nope, that's it. I mean, this is the high-end remote. It's usually retails for between $200 to $300. You find it online, or you can buy it through eBay like I did for about $80.
And then, so if you get that, you're ready to go. You can just connect that up to tell it all your different sources, and you're ready to go.
Yep, and you can actually program the remote. You actually download pictures to it if you want. So when it's sitting in its dormant state, I actually can go through a little slideshow of the pictures you have on it, and it has all the different activities that you have.
Sounds
so
good.
Actually, turn everything off with one simple button, or different activity. You want to like play a game on your Xbox, so actually turn it on, switch all your video inputs, your audio inputs, and you're off and playing.
And I guess then it can control the Xbox as well by using the infrared port on the Xbox.
Yep, it actually has an Xbox setting, so you control the Media Center through the Xbox 360 too, if that's what you want to do.
Well, that would be good, because one of the issues I have with my Xbox is where I sit, it's slightly out the line of sight, and I found that the Media Center remote that I use is not very sensitive with the Xbox for some reason, so you end up fiddling around, and so the majority of the time I tend to use the Xbox controller, but it's not as family friendly as a normal remote control. So I guess I could use one of these with the little IR blasters and have the Harmony control my TV, my receiver, my Xbox, and so one control that can do everything.
Right, because it's a great thing for, especially if someone who has a cabinet, they have all the components in a cabinet or in a closet like I do. That's the best option, is use an RF one. I mean, granted, Harmony does make one that's 4 to 360, but it's only based on IR. And it also has the buttons for the Xbox 360 on the actual remote. It's got the X, the B, the Y, and the A buttons, all color-coded.
Oh, that's excellent. That sounds a good gift. It's a little on the expensive side, but for what it does, it answers a lot of problems. And it makes things simple, doesn't it? It's more like for the family, isn't it, really? You want to keep everything as simple as possible. Otherwise, I know my wife frowns at me when I tell her to control, the TV through the Xbox 360 controller.
Yeah, it passes the spousal acceptance factor big time. My wife just like she loves the remote because she doesn't know how to turn on. Although my wife has a little bit more difficulty with it.
So what's the product name and number for that so we can have a look for it?
That's the Logitech 890 remote control. There's also one for the Xbox 360. The one for the Logitech retails for around $389 for the 890, and the Xbox Logitech remote retails around for $99. If you look, so a little cheaper. You might be able to find out that online for like $79, or both of them could be found probably pretty cheap on eBay as well.
Excellent. So that's definitely one for the shopping list. So I think that's one for I'll have a look at.
Nice thing about the remote control is that it does multiple functions. So it's easier also for the spousal acceptance factor. So
right,
my wife
yeah.
actually likes it a lot.
Yeah, that's an important factor. You can control the different things. So I guess then you could, as well as using it on all that kit, you could use it for other non-media center related kit as well.
Yeah, it controls all multiple devices. I mean, my kids have no problem controlling the different devices, but my wife has the big problem with that.
Yeah, I just think it's just a bit. I always feel a bit sort of embarrassed when you've got to use the 360 control and with the right trigger to fast forward, you know, while you're doing that.
Yeah, you flip through all the different remote controls and controllers you have lying around.
Yeah, that's it, and they're all scattered, and you can never find all of them at the same time anyway.
No.
It's so this does add to that.
One device in one spot, and you just got to make sure it's recharged.
Yeah. And does it have a little charger then for it?
Yeah, it does. It actually has a charger that lays down. You can lay the controller down on it.
Oh, that's so that way you at least know where the controller is then, if
exactly.
you keep it on the charge station. And you mentioned the Keyspan one, so is that similar?
Well, Keyspan, they came out with a new remote control that basically it's based on RF. They just came out with it recently, and there was some giveaways actually done by some of the people in Microsoft on one of the blogs. And basically that works the same exact way. You use a little USB key that you plug into your Media Center PC, and it actually allow you to control your Media Center by RF rather than using IR, which works great for people who are like exactly the same problems you have. You can't get the straight IR connection.
Mm. I suppose with people that are putting the Media Center in a sort of server closet or, like you said, in a cabinet, that's ideal.
Right. Or if they use it around the house, if it's within the certain range of the RF remote. But the only downside is that the remote looks exactly like your standard $30 Media Center remote. It doesn't have any extra bells or whistles. It's exactly like a regular Media Center remote, except that it uses RF.
And can you control other devices, or is it purely just controlling PC?
It just controls the PC. That's it, and your TV, if you have that set up.
Right, yeah, so it can learn for the TV side of it. I suppose it's good if you're using a direct PC connection to your in your system, but if you're using extenders or Xboxes or multiple devices, then it's not ideal.
Yep.
And what kind of pricing of that one? I guess that'd be cheaper then.
That was about $49 retail.
Oh yeah.
So it's only for Vista Home Premium and Vista Ultimate. So it's not slated to work with a Media Center XP, but I'm sure it probably will.
Yeah, I guess it probably emulates the normal Vista Media Center remote or the normal Media Center commands for the IR uses.
Exactly, through the USB key and the drivers that are on it. And Keyspan also has a lot of other products that are pretty cool over USB as well. I mean, I use one of the other products they have. It's basically a USB server. So it allows you to hook up multiple USB devices and make it network accessible. So if you have like a USB hard drive or a thumb drive or, let's say, a printer scanner, and you're not near it, you're on your laptop or something like that, and you want to connect up to it, you can actually just connect right through that USB server.
Right, I was reading about these the other day, and I guess then if it's networked enabled, it goes over. You can use it over the wireless.
Yep. So like one of the things we have a printer fax machine, and me and my wife share it, but it doesn't have a network port on the back of it. In order to do scanning. Shared scanning, there's no other product. Even if you had it over a network, you can't really share it unless you pay for a high-end system from like Xerox or Sharp that has that ability. So if you have a standard printer or scanner, all-in-one device is about $100 that like most people do. You want to share that with the family. This is a great option for you. Because all you have to do, basically only one person can connect at a time, but all you have to do is start the software up, connect up to it, and then you can use it as if it was physically plugged into the USB port on your laptop or your computer.
Well, that's a pretty neat solution that for because there's so many like cameras and like you said scanners and printers and all these kind of things and you, I think if you've got a central PC in sort of in the living room, then it's not too bad. But as the PCs get kind of distributed around the home and into closets and things, then that's a good solution.
Yeah, it's great for us, for my kids, because they like to scan in all the artwork that they do from school. So they all do, they have their own laptop. They can connect up to it and they can scan away on it and without having to hook up any cables whatsoever.
I guess then that's just routing the USB over the IP, so the devices themselves don't really need to be aware of the fact that they're running over the network and not locally connected.
No, it's all seamless right through the software. So basically all you do is just turn on your software and see what device you want to connect to, and then you're connected.
Excellent. That's a good idea, then. And so what's the kind of retail price on those?
Depends on what you're looking for. They have different price ranges for the USB server products. I'm trying to think how much I paid. I think I only paid $100 for it, but I think it retails for around $129. There's two different types of them, too. There's a USB 2.0 server and a standard USB 1.1 server.
Well, that's a nice little, that'd make a good gift, wouldn't it, for someone that's got a lot of USB devices and multiple machines. And I think nowadays you tend to find a lot of people have got, you know, media center machines, and then they've got a laptop maybe from work, and UMPCs and all these different devices. So that's nice to tie it all together.
Exactly, and if you have an external hard drive you want to share between, a lot of people use it. I use for backup, so I have it. I have a script set up so it automatically connects up to it and backs up all my my devices, so I don't have to use any other third-party programs like OneCare, or which is another great gift. You can do that as well, or Home Server.
Hmm. Well, I like that. I think that's a useful gadget, isn't it? I mean, some of the gadgets that you see are fun, but maybe not so useful, but that's definitely a useful one, so I'll stick that on my list as well.
Yeah. I mean, just tons of other nice gadgets in Gadgetland. I mean, but you have to also make sure, like, if you do make a tech purchase for a loved one, just make sure it's something that they really want. I mean, there's a funny commercial here that aired in the States a few years ago about a husband that went out and wanted to buy a gift for his wife. The previous year he bought her, like, a treadmill, and the year before that was, like, a table saw. And then the year before that was in that year he's bought her a plasma TV. Basically, they're all gifts for himself. So,
absolutely, yeah. Some of these things are probably more of a gift to yourself, perhaps.
Yeah.
Or leave hints lying around. Maybe this show would be good for some of the listeners to leave on in the background and let their family have a listen to it to get some gift ideas.
Yeah. Seems like the most popular gifts right now are GPS devices and satellite radios, because they're great gifts that just about everyone can use. I mean, the newer GPS is now including real-time traffic updates, like the Garmin Nuvi.
Mm.
They came out with a few different models at CES. They were just on display with the Street Pilot. I think it was the C580, the 680, and the 750. They use MSN Direct traffic updates as well as gas price updates via the MSDN Direct connections, like that's used on the spot watches.
Excellent. Well, that's good to hear that some of the spot technology is still going.
Yeah, it is, and they're on sale now, so you can buy them, purchase them in the stores, and when you buy the unit, it actually comes, I think, with a lifetime service to the MSN Direct. You have to pay a monthly fee as you do with the watches.
Yeah,
so it's similar to like the coffee maker they had that had MSN Direct with that as well, which I didn't think was too popular of a device, but it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I guess that the MSN Direct services in the spot watches and were kind of almost an experiment to see that, you know, what you can do with the technology and sort of pushing the envelope on that technology, and more practical uses, things like traffic updates and things like that, are probably where the technology will end up.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it seems like, where they're pushing it, and there's a few companies have taken advantage of it, like Garmin. But a few other GPSs are using basically the other services that are available for traffic updates. One of them is that I saw over in the TelAtlas booth. They had two different products that were pretty decent. One of them is from Harman Kardon. They just came out with this product now. It's called the GPS 810. It has a 4.3-inch touchscreen, so it's a pretty wide screen with the WXVGA resolution. It also had a wireless remote control knob, which was really cool. So it actually has a little touch, almost like a compass. You touch it around, and it also has a knob that you turn to move through the screen if you don't want to use the touch screen. So it looks like you can have it has a suction cup. You guys can move it, put it anywhere in your car. you can control it. And that, how that works with the real-time traffic updates uses a FM radio, which is called TMC. It stands for a traffic message channel. Mm. And for additional, they charge about $6 a month for that service. And the device also supports Windows Media Player 10, DRM, so it's compatible with most of the different music services that are out there and should be compatible also with Amazon Unbox because it's Play for Sure.
Right.
So you can actually download shows, and it has an SDHC slot, so you can actually put on all your media onto that drive, and you can also control it right through the display. So not only is it a GPS, has Bluetooth in it too, so it interacts with your phone and your address book in there, also can play music and videos as well. Well,
that's a nice idea. I mean, it's probably similar to what I've been doing though with my Trio. Is I've got obviously it's Windows Mobile, so I've got my Windows Media Player on there, but I've got the TomTom SatNav software on there, and TomTom have I think it's about £36, something like that, and you can pay for a yearly service to get the traffic updates. So I get that, and because it just comes over the over the phone. So, you know, I've got the complete solution there. So I've just got my, my Trio on the dash with a holder, and it picks it up. And I've got a little separate GPS receiver device. It works quite nicely, actually. And I was using that for everything until I got the Zune, but we'll sort of come back to the Zune in a minute. But that works quite nicely, and, you know, I get the traffic updates. And that is a nice function, that.
Yeah, and actually, TomTom actually has some newer devices. I saw some betas where it... And I know a friend of mine, Johan Van Merle, he's a beta tester for TomTom. He actually had one of the newer GPS devices, also has a gyroscope in it. So it actually can tell when you're going inside the tunnels, up and down. It'll actually track, and actually you can almost maintain a signal through the FM signals when you're going through tunnels, because sometimes you use GPS. But he found that for traffic updates, he found that the data connection on his phone was actually more up to date than the one through the FM transmitter.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I found that... It's pretty accurate, actually, the travel update. I get, you know, I think I've got it set for every 10 minutes or something like that. It just pulls the pulls TomTom, and I get the travel updates. And it's a nice solution, although I must admit it's certainly one that's a bit, having the separate devices is a bit technical. So I bought my wife just a dedicated TomTom unit that she can stick in the car, and you know that just works out the box.
Is it the TomTom One?
Yeah, it is actually. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very popular device in the States. I mean, it retails here in the States for between $100 and $139. And some of them even have, depending on the generation of the TomTom One, it also has a Bluetooth connectivity to your phone, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, this one does. Well, it's interesting you mentioned the price there. I think I've seen, the TomTom One is around £139. So when you consider the exchange rate is nearly $2 a pound, it shows you how much more that we end up paying for these devices in the UK. When considered, I think TomTom are a Dutch company, aren't they?
Yeah, and the Harman Kardon, the GPS 810 I was talking about, that's pretty hefty too. I mean, it's pretty up there. I think it's around $600 in the US, and not including the $6 a month fee yet. Pay for the data, but if you do go to the website, you can get 50 free downloads from eMusic. So they have a link on there. So if you want to try it out, it's free DRM free downloads from eMusic by checking on the Harman Kardon website.
I think the sat navs now have come down so much that I think more or less everybody's getting one of them, throwing them in the car now. So, I mean, there was a time early. Probably last year, where they were the sort of the one number one item to be stolen out of cars, but now they're becoming so cheap that it's almost, I think the sort of the crime on them has gone down.
Oh yeah, and another thing too, I know like what Garmin does, they actually have a lock. Actually, will lock the GPS unit inside of your car, so it locks to the mount, so you can't remove it. So like an anti-theft feature. And I've been beta testing a new device from called Dash. It's called the Dash Express. GPS. Basically, how that works, it actually has a GPS radio built into it for real-time traffic updates. It also gets the real-time traffic updates from other Dash users. So if another car has a Dash Express unit inside of its car, it'll actually relay the information if it's sitting still or if it's actually moving along to the traffic update service that they use for mapping out traffic. So it will reroute you depending on the traffic. Also supports gas price lookup via its internet data connection, as well as Yahoo search. So you can, anything that's not in the database on the maps, you can use Yahoo search to do a search for it on the Yahoo maps, and it'll actually send that information directly to the device.
Well, that sounds a good idea. I mean, the one thing that kind of puts me off on these things, though, is is the data cost, you know, you've got to be on a good plan, otherwise, you know, these things are going to run big bills.
Yeah, well, nice thing about this one, I think it's including the GPRS service. They haven't really set out how much of this device is going to cost and what the service plan is going to be. But if it's included with it, it makes for a pretty decent device if it's the GPRS data is included with it. It's also going to support some Web 2.0 applications, too. They actually did a demonstration of it. I think there's the video of it is up on the web as well. I'll send you the link for that. But it supports Web 2.0 applications like Zillow. So you can actually look up house information. You pull it to a house directly from the GPS. You can pull up Zillow.com, which is a popular website here in the U.S. You can pull up the last price that the house was sold for, information on the house, how many bedrooms in it, and how much it costs. So it has a little implications. You can use other Web 2.0 devices to use with it as well.
I suppose that's where these devices are going to go in the future, aren't they? As well as getting the sort of the traffic in the road and the route planning, they're also like going to have these Web 2.0 services, house prices and what's on, and I guess Google are going to look at advertising and all that, location advertising.
Yeah, and gas and petrol prices are climbing everywhere, so trying to find the cheapest prices sometimes is a good thing to do. So on your route, you can see, or on your way home or to and from work, you can see which is the cheapest place that you can get gas.
Which like you said, is pretty important. So, I mean, the other thing we mentioned about sort of for the in-car stuff is my personal favourite gadget at the moment is the new Zune stuff. And they've got some in-car options. But before we talk about those, just take a look at the new Zunes. I mean, I've talked about them on the show previously. But what's your opinion of the new Zune software and the new Zune devices?
The new Zune software is pretty good. I mean, it's a huge update from version 1.0. I know you have a Zune unit. You probably did the upgrade on it as well. And the functionality that it adds to it, I mean, it has a nice new font on it, so it looks really nice. It gives it easier to use, as they say, interface. But I think it's the same interface. It's just easier to see. Mm. Let's put it that way, especially for aging eyes. But the main features that it also supports is podcast support, which is a nice feature. So a lot of websites like we've done for the Media Center show, you put it on the one click. So actually it supports all the metadata and RSS feeds that people put in their podcasts for video as well as audio right onto the device. So actually you can see it, what's on the device, excluding the small little pictures that a lot of people put in their RSS feeds. So you actually see picture icons as well.
Yeah,
and your shows.
Yeah, I like things. Just a simple thing like the resuming of it, just makes it so much easier than it was previously.
Yeah. And it resumes bookmarks where you left off on that. And some other things that I thought was pretty cool too is that if you fast forward through your podcasts, which I have a tendency to do for some of them that are moving pretty slow. You actually can hear the audio before it would. I don't think you could even do that. You would just skip ahead.
Yeah.
Same thing with the video. You wouldn't see it. It would just jump ahead instead of actually seeing the actual video moving.
Yeah.
And another thing, too, is that if you do that and you set it for auto syncing, it won't remove the podcast unless you actually play it through the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just the whole podcast management features are just, you know, sort of... Well, they weren't there at all before, were they? So, you know, to find a show, I usually relied on the fact that the author had put them in as the genre as podcast, otherwise they'd get lost totally within the rest of the collection.
Yeah, and the other feature that I really love, because I actually use my Zune up in my bathroom. What I have is I have a little audio docking station I can hook up to the speakers above in my bathroom, and I have it in a docking station, so it uses the wireless sync. So I'll automatically download any music I update on my computer, or if I update any podcast, so I'll automatically sync them right to the device. So wireless sync is one of the huge features that a lot of people in Zune, with the Zune 1 software, are saying, where is that?
Some people were complaining at first that you know it wouldn't automatically sync unless you had the Zune powered, and what was the point of that? But for your exact reason is you can use the Zune as a media device connected to your TV or to audio equipment, and then just like you said, on a docking station, and it automatically gets all the content.
Right, and some of the video output is pretty good on the new 80 Zunes. They actually support a higher resolution on the video out, so it looks pretty decent on a television. Right now, the standard Zunes don't have that same output.
Mm. I'll be interested to see that, actually. Hopefully I'll get to see that at CES, some of the TV output. I'm all right thinking that it's actually 720p that they'll put out.
Yeah, I think it can. There's actually some specs on it, and actually there's some video of someone actually using it on a high definition TV. I mean, granted, it doesn't do full video. It depends on your input, how the stuff is encoded, and what the quality of the video is.
Yeah, great. I mean, you could kind of use it as almost like an extender. Then, couldn't you? You could use it to wirelessly sync the content, and then play it back through the TV. Even with a remote, you can get Zoom remote controls.
Right. I mean, that's like a thing. Where, like the home AV pack actually comes with all that included in it. It has the wireless remote control, which looks a lot similar to the new Zoom Square Circle. They call it the Squircle. Or a Zoom pad.
Yep.
And it also has the docking station, the power cable for that, and also the cables, the audio video cable that can plug into your television as well. So you can have that plugged in and it'll automatically syncing right up to your television. But the only downside that doesn't work on the remote control is the power on and off. You physically have to go over and turn it on or off the Zoom. Or if you just leave it in the power charger on all the time,
right,
it will automatically sync up. So that's probably the option a lot of people want to do. Or they can take it with them traveling. Because a lot of newer hotels, I was just in New York City a few weeks ago for a Microsoft event, and the hotel I stayed at actually had an audio-video panel right on the desk. So you can plug in your laptop, you can plug in different audio-video sources from HDMI, component, standard composite video audio, right up to the flat-screen television that's right there.
Because I noticed I went to a hotel not so long ago, and they had an MP3 input, which is just a stereo jack that you could plug into your laptop or your Zoom or your iPod or whatever, and that played through the TV speakers. So, but it's good to see that they're looking forward and offering those connections. It'd be nice to see a Zoom dock on when you go in there, but I guess it'll be a while before we see those.
Yeah, I think the iPod has a bigger foothold on that. But basically what this appeals to all different audio and video players that are out there on the market. So I think if they had the standard connectors, just about every like audio video player from Arcos, Creative, as well as the iPod and the Zoom are all there.
I think that's a good idea, and with the Zoom as well, there's a whole new range of accessories, isn't there? Like you said, the AV dock and there's some car accessories as well.
Yeah, there's a new car kit as well, and actually that has a little bit better quality than the previous car kit that was out. A lot of people said it was basically a piece of junk, the previous version. The newer version has, I guess, a better audio quality with it as well. Also has some presets as well, so you have one or two presets you can switch between if you have an interference to the audio. But you can use other third-party products, so it also charges it. They also have a travel kit and a new docking station that will support the new 80-gig Zoom. Because before, the only mod, you can actually do a mod. And actually, yeah, Chris Lepus has a link to how to do the modification on his new website, which is called gotzoom.com. And actually, I'll send a link for that too, how you actually can modify the old Cradle to support the new 80 gigabyte Zoom.
And what do you think about the idea of these Zoom Originals with the sketch on the back?
Oh, the Zoom Originals looks really, really cool. Well, you actually can customize the back of your device with a, I think like four lines of text. So you can personalize the device, and also you can put on a picture as well from pre-selected different pictures on there. They don't allow you to upload your own image on there because I guess they want to keep down people from putting some explicit pictures on the back of it, but you can customize both the different Zooms. Right now, they only support the 4 gigabyte and 8 gigabyte flash-based players, but because I guess due to inventory problems, they won't be supporting the new Zoom 80.
I've actually just seen they're going to support the 80. I think I just saw that today.
It's on December 4th. They should be coming out with it. That was the original date. I don't know if that got pushed back or not to the 20th with some other rumors I heard because of the supply and demand of it. But for it's the same exact price you'd buy a Zoom in the store. You can order it from them. Comes in a nice new packaging as well, and it has the nice clear. It has an imprint on the back of it, depending on the pattern you want on it, as well as any customization. So it makes it a nice little gift. I mean, the iPod has that ability. You can do that too when you order from the Apple Store. So the Zoom looks like they're trying to do something nice for the gift-giving season.
But the price of the new Zooms are pretty competitive as well. I think they're the same price as the equivalent iPods.
Yeah, that was the market they were shooting for. I mean, they're shooting to get the flash-based players or the Nanos. So if you look at the price point, it pretty much matches dead on with the 4 gigabyte and 8 gigabyte models offered by Apple. And same as well, so the 80 gigabyte matches up with the 80 gigabyte iPod Classic, what they call it now.
I mean, I must admit, I've really liked the Zune. I liked the Zune before, but this version 2 is fantastic. And the PC management software, okay, there are features missing off it that I'd like to see, but I think they've just kept it simple, and it looks great, and it does exactly, you know, what it sets out to do, and gone is the sort of the horrendous mess of the V1 butchered Windows Media Player software.
Yeah, basically what they the version one basically what they did, they basically implemented it into Windows Media Player, kind of like with Urge as a separate tab, and now they came out with their own new software. So with the new software, it allows you to do. It's a little bit different when you have your art, your albums on the left hand side, and your right hand side. You think you have all your songs, and they just did a nice UI on. You can actually customize the background on the software itself with different images if you want to do that. Just like you can on the Zune player. You can also it's just a lot easier to use with the drag and drop functionality of it. You just basically take your input and just drop it on from your what you have on your computer onto your device. It makes it a little bit easier to make playlists as well as to sync different audio and video. And they make it easier now with the auto syncing capability as well.
It just looks better. It looks really nice, clean. It does remind me of Media Center in some ways, the way they've got the kind of the gallery functions across the top, but it's cleaner and it just seems to work better.
Oh yeah, I mean they did a lot of cool things. The problems a lot of people have been having with it is the metadata, and it doesn't really alter your metadata on the Zune on your music files itself. It's actually only inside the software. So if you're using with the Windows Media Player or use Media Monkey or something like that to adjust the metadata, and I found out all I do is just if I had any problems where it screwed up the data, there's actually a fix out there you can actually do. Actually resets the thing so actually can search out for the new information. All I would do is just go into Windows Media Player and there's an option in early, under Tools that allows you to auto-update all your files. And I would just do that. And so most of the metadata should be correct for all your different media. And then I would go into the Zune software and automatically find the information from that Windows Media Player had made the changes to, and it corrected it, all the album art as well as all the other metadata.
I must admit, I've not really had a huge problem with the metadata, but when you've got a nice big visual screen, you want album art, and you know there's no way you'll put up without having the album art when you're using the Zune player.
Yeah. And a new thing,
it needs to be there.
A nice new thing they added too for the social part of it. They added Zune tags, which is pretty cool. Kind of like the gamer tags you have on Xbox 360, which was pretty neat. Is that you actually can see what your friends are actually playing on their Zune player. So it actually puts on the last songs when you sync your device. It'll show you the last like 5 or 10 songs that you played and what your most popular are.
Yeah, that's a really nice feature, but for some reason I think they've blocked non-US IPs on that because I definitely can't get that to work.
Yeah, it looks like it's all tied to how the live points work. So like with the same thing with like Xbox Live, certain things are blocked by IP, which kind of stinks.
I've got a Zune account, so I can go into the marketplace and I can buy tracks if I want, if I associate a credit card with it. But what I can't do is then it's just the card says no tracks played, so that just somewhere it's falling over on IP addresses.
Right. Back to the Zune pricing for Zune Originals. So if I remember what the prices are, it's for the Zune 4 flash drive, it's $149, and it ships within 5-7 days from Zune Originals as well, and the 8-gig goes for $199.
They're not bad prices. It just I'd like to see those in the UK and to see them competitively priced, but I guess we're gonna have to wait for that because there just seems to be no legitimate or simple way to get them in the UK apart from people seem to be buying off eBay, and that's about the only way to do it.
Right, and or they have friends in the States that send them out to them. I mean, I don't know how many devices I've sent out to friends in outside of the United States that wanted the devices, and I just think it's kind of sad because they had the market share for it and they just don't support it. Well, you look at iPod, that's one of the things they make sure they do. They do a worldwide, and they just like the thing that they just announced recently for Apple is the iPhone, which seems to be the Uber phone or the Jesus phone a lot of people want. And they released that it can be unlocked now in Europe through T-Mobile.
Yeah, interestingly, from obviously I've listened to a lot of podcasts that have talked about the iPhone, and so prior to the US launch, so I've heard the hype and everything else. But I get the kind of impression, and I maybe be wrong because I knew a couple of listeners have got hold of them, is there really isn't the same in hype and enthusiasm for the devices here. That, you know, when the devices were, the iPhone was available in the stores, they made a big thing about there going to be big lines of people outside the Carphone warehouse and the O2 stores that were selling in the UK, but that wasn't the case. And there's been some bad press about the signal quality and people not being able to get them. And I kind of think, you know, the fact you've got to pay for them, and in the UK we're not really used to paying huge amounts for contract phones. I think really that there's not the same enthusiasm for the iPhone over here.
Yeah, not until the next version comes out. I think with 3G is a big thing that a lot of people want on it, and it doesn't quite have that yet. So people in Europe are used to faster data connections than here in the States.
And I think the price. I was listening to some people talking about it the other day. That, you know, the people in the UK, the model tends to be, if you've got a contract phone, you don't pay for your phone. Or you pay a small amount. If you've got a pay-as-you-go phone, then you pay for the phone. Mm-hmm. But not both.
Right. And it is an expensive device. And, you know, within 6 months of Apple, they always come out with the latest and greatest. And a lot of people got burned with that in the United States, where they bought the iPhone and they bought, like they say, the 8-gigabyte model. And then 2 months later, it wasn't even offered anymore.
Yeah, yeah, and I think they had to offer some discounts, didn't they, for
rebates for
early adopters?
They offered, I think it was like a $200 price difference between it, but they offered like $100 you can get back, which was kind of nice. So, but for the early adopters, they kind of got burned, and they felt like it was a steep price to pay. And who knows? They say in 6 months they're going to come out with a 3G version, and it'll probably have 16 gigabytes of data storage on it.
Yeah. And kind of, I think, anybody who's sort of using the smartphones and, you know, get used to getting your exchange and everything else, it's probably not the device for you, certainly from the business side of things.
Yeah, but who knows? Say, I know, like, Nokia, for the popular, like, the N95s, they actually license Active Sync software, so you can use Exchange on it. So Microsoft does license that out to people, and maybe Apple will pick that up and say, hey, we don't have that business sense. We only support push email, and we also support basic POP and what's the other one? I can't think of.
TiMap.
Yeah, and IMAP mapping. So that works with Exchange and some other services that are out there, but to have full direct push, it's a big saver on battery life, so you don't have to constantly pull out there to use up your battery life. It's just a great thing to have. I mean, I love Exchange with direct push. I mean, it's a great thing just for as a consumer as well as for a business person.
Yeah, absolutely. I use it as well. In fact, I must admit, one of the things I have sort of multiple email accounts, as people tend to do now. So I've got kind of the corporate stuff on Exchange, and I've got all the digitallifestyle.com email going through sort of Google applications, so I've got my own sort of domain on there, and with the IMAP functions, and now I can use the Trio to retrieve all that email. So I've got, again, I'm back to sort of one device that can do all my email without going through web browsers.
Yeah, and where the iPhone also suffers from is the fact that right now there's not too many applications written for it, but that's gonna change now that they release the SDK. Because I mean, you release a device out there without any applications for it, it makes almost no sense. And Google also updated, I think, their new the new mobile mapping solution, which they'll probably update also for the iPhone as well. Right now, you can get it now for Windows Mobile device as well as some other phones that are out there, and BlackBerry as well. That actually allows you to triangulate your actual location based on your antenna from cellular radio. So basically, it does a triangulation and calculates where you are. So it does what's called my location within 1,000 feet of where you are. So you actually can find certain objects that are in your area, and that's free. So you just go to google.com/ I think it's GMM.
I think that's a good service. If you've not got a GPS phone, then that's pretty good then.
And also supports GPS as well. So if you want to hook it up to GPS, you can do that. So there's also Windows Live Mobile Search also supports GPS as well, and that's another nice free solution. And a new beta version of that also supports voice, which is pretty cool. You actually can actually uses a voice server. So basically, there's nothing using voice command on the actual device. It's actually using a server that actually translates what you're saying into text. And you can do a search off of that. So if you want to look for pizza or movies in your area, you just say, you speak into it, and it actually pulls up all your searches. So it's a little bit nicer for a phone, since you don't want to type something in while you're driving.
Yeah, absolutely. Sending text messages, replying to emails, and doing looking at Facebook on your mobile while you're driving is not a good plan.
No.
Although it's tempting.
Yeah, it is.
That's the thing with these mobile devices. They can you can cram so much into them. They kind of they're almost there on the convergent side of things. You know, you can get your maps on there and email and web and music. But I just found that as much as I'd like to have everything converged, the dedicated devices do the job better at the moment anyway, like Zoom for music,
oh, yeah.
A TomTom
exactly.
for the sat-nav. You know, the dedicated devices are still at this stage better.
Exactly. I totally agree with you. But so there's some things it's good to have as a backup. Like I've been driving around and I was actually got stuck in traffic and I didn't have my GPS unit. My wife had it. So I pulled out my Bluetooth GPS and my pocket PC phone and I remapped my route based on my data connection and I was able to find it that way. I also can listen to Sirius satellite radio at work. I do that through my phone since I can't get a signal inside the office building. But I still use like the same dedicated player. I mean, once you start using one like the Zoom, it works pretty well for my needs.
And absolutely.
My daughter wants one now too. She doesn't like the iPod. I have the iPod as well, and she doesn't like the interface, which I thought was kind of funny though. When she first used the Zoom though, she tried to rotate the circle like on the iPod.
It's good to see that, you know, you've got choice and you don't have to. I mean, for me, I don't really like iTunes. I think that's the sticking point for me, and the Zoom software is much better than iTunes, for me anyway.
It's still kind of heavy, though. The software is still kind of heavy. Could be lighter. It can run a little bit smoother because on lower processor computers, I've noticed it's kind of slow and it sucks up a lot of memory.
I've run it on my Samsung UMPC, and it does seem to run okay on there. It runs certainly better than the old Zoom software did.
Oh, yeah. But it's not as buggy as iTunes. I've had more problems with iTunes than any other software that I know of on Windows-based computers.
Yeah, I had an interesting comment. Someone described iTunes as kind of being a spreadsheet for music compared to the Zoom software, which was nice to hear Microsoft, you know, being complimented for the UI over Apple for a change.
Yeah, which is kind of nice.
Now, on the gadget fronts, before we run out of time, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Amazon Kindle, because, again, another product not available in the UK, but obviously I've heard a lot about it and read a lot about it. This is the ebook reader from Amazon, and on the face of it, it looks good, but I've heard mixed reports. So what are your thoughts on that?
It seems like a pretty decent device, but for the price point of $399, it seems kind of high. I mean, and the thing is that you're locked down to ebooks that are only available through Amazon.com. Granted, you're given a huge selection of ebooks you can purchase for about, I think, about $10 a selection. You also get free subscription to the data, which is on it, which is, I think it uses Sprint's EVDO connection. So it's pretty fast and it's unlimited. So you basically paying for that with the device to download and updates for the subscriptions to different magazines and newspapers like New York Times, Wall Street Journal, some other magazines that they throw in there too. I can't remember off the top of my head which ones they include, but if you're looking at that, it's a black and white reader similar to like the Sony ebook reader that's out there for about the same. Sony ebook reader retails for anything around $299, but allows you to import in just about any type of ebook, so you're not locked down to the DRM. I don't know if you can do that with the same thing with the Amazon device. But also, the Amazon device also allows you to, you can also sync blogs, but I don't know if that's, some people are saying that might be for a fee. I haven't played with it yet or seen much on it, but it seems kind of ridiculous that you have to pay to subscribe to a blog.
Yeah, I believe you do. And although I did hear that you can email you get a Kindle.com email address.
Oh, really?
And you can email documents to be, I think you can email PDFs to get them in. But still having a sort of a lockdown. But I guess it's an experimental device. My thoughts would be, you know, it's not a mass market device, but it's the price, you know, because I kind of read that I think the books are the same price for the ebook version as the physical version, and then you've got the price of the Kindle on top of that, and it does seem, you know, they're not really pushing it for the average consumer.
Yeah, I mean Amazon is doing a lot with DRM freezing. They have their MP3 music, their new Unbox video, which me and my family love the Unbox video. I mean, if they could implement that onto a device with that's not black and white. But the nice thing about the Kindle, I guess, it's easy to read indoors and outdoors. That's the nice thing about the paper LCD that they use.
And I guess its battery life is good on it.
Yeah, it's supposed to have phenomenal battery life, especially even with the data connection.
Yeah.
And I think they're out of stock already, so I mean, it's pretty decent that they've done that already with the device.
It's the kind of locked-inness that worries you. And it's almost going back to sort of your iTunes and your iPod thing, isn't it, where while that's been really successful for some people, that being that locked in that ecosystem isn't what they want.
Yeah, you're basically locked into what they're feeding you. So, like, I read just I'm a casual ebook reader. So one thing that I like to do is actually go to the library because they're free. You can actually go to your local library and actually you can download ebooks and you can read them, which kind of defeats that purpose. And there's actually some websites out there as well that allow you to download ebooks DRM free. You can read them on your device, let's say on your UMPC, which is a nice actually size for a device, and you actually have color on it too. If some of the ebooks actually support color.
Mm. I mean, I've read some ebooks on my UMPC, and like I said, it does work. It does work quite nicely, but it's always the battery life that's the issue. But I would prefer to have the choice to be able to read the same book on my laptop or my UMPC or a dedicated device. You know, I don't want to be tied to one device.
Right. That's the thing is you have a dedicated device, and let's say you lose your Kindle on a plane or something like that. And you lose all your all your books. If you had a paperback book, you just lose that, and you could buy a new one. I don't know if people actually do that, but I know some people have. They've lost their ebook readers on planes, and they've done the same, fall into the same predicament.
I'm interested to see how people take to it as well. I mean, when you carry all these devices around, I mean, I went to took the kids to a kids party the other week, and you know, sometimes you've got to stay, and I end up staying, and I sort of had in me with my bag, I had my laptop and my UMPC, and I needed to write an article. So I did that on the UMPC in the end because it just felt more comfortable than pulling out a laptop. And, you know, people thinking, who's this weirdo who's doing his laptop, you know, he's brought his work to the kids' party, whereas a UMPC with the pen felt a bit more natural and I felt more comfortable with that. And then whether people would feel comfortable. Yeah, exactly. I wrote it all in OneNote by hand and then converted it later. And, you know, that saved me, you know, doing nothing for that time. Okay, it took a bit of time converting it, but I would have felt very self-conscious typing it away, bashing away onto a laptop, even on a tablet PC.
Yeah, and I think what's nice about the UMPC or using ink it's not as impersonal. I mean, if you pull out your phone, you're typing on it, people think it's rude. Same thing with a laptop. You pull up the screen. You get like a barrier between you. And with a nice thing without a UMPC or a tablet PC is when you're writing on ink, it doesn't seem to be in the way of things.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt, you know, comfortable handwriting on the thing. I mean, first anybody could see it could have been a notepad that I was writing on. Probably wondered what I was doing writing notes. But anyway, it still felt better than bringing a laptop, especially, say, my work Sony laptop, a huge thing that would have given me half an hour battery anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I have the Fujitsu P1610, and I think I have usually, if I turn the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth off, I get about 8 hours of battery life with extended battery, and that thing's just so nice, easy to carry around and carry between soccer matches, and I can read my RSS feeds, make a few notes, see a few emails. If I sync it up with the Bluetooth on my phone, it's all done wirelessly, no one knows any of the difference, and it reads pretty well outside as well.
It's a nice device. I've got the HP 2710P tablet, and I get some great battery life out of that, even with just the standard battery.
Yeah, the 2710P's also got that nice card reader too, right?
Well, this one hasn't actually. I don't know whether it's a UK-specific edition of it but this one I ended up with without the card reader, but it is a really nice laptop and nice tablet PC.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Kindle, it's pretty nice, though. I mean, if you think about it, it's only, 10.3 ounces, so it's just under a pound. It's got the WhisperNet from Sprint EVDO, so it has the data, and it's got that long battery life, and it survives drop tests.
I guess that this is one of those products where the version 2 product is going to be where it really hits. You can see the early adopters are going to go with this, but they're going to produce a better looking device and get some of the user feedback and reduce the prices and all those kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll find a lot of these on like eBay or on Woot.
Yeah,
at a pretty discount later on in the year. So I say hold out. I would hold out for something like this, but if you are in the gotta have it now gadget, it seems like a pretty decent device if you're a big ebook reader. But personally for me, it's still cheaper to go to the library and get a real book or download the ebook from the library.
So to wrap things up then, you say looking at the last 12 months since CES, there's been a lot of gadgets around. We've got the Zunes and the iPhones and things. If there was one gadget that you think, you know, that you've either got or you want to get, that you pick over the year, what would sort of your gadget of the year be?
That's kind of hard to say. Right now, I say there's one thing I don't have. I'd love to get one of the new digital picture frames that are out there that have Wi-Fi in them. And it doesn't have a subscription fee. I mean, there's a few of them that are out there. We saw at CES, some like iMate had a few frames, but they have a subscription fee with theirs. Kodak has a wireless picture frames that have interchangeable, you can actually change out the frames on the outside of it. And a few other manufacturers out there also have a Wi-Fi free, so you can actually upload little pictures up to Flickr. It will get to RSS feed. Like Sharp has a new one that just came out, but they're relatively small, around 7 inches, and I think a 10-inch is actually a nice size for a wireless display that you can actually give to your family members. So you just give them the picture frame, and they'll automatically see all your pictures you upload to Flickr or up to SmugMug or any other photo service that you use. Or you can even do an RSS feed to your website.
That's quite nice. It's nice giving the frame with the connectivity as well.
Right, and most like some of the early versions all had subscription based fees, and I think it's kind of allows you to give a person a gift when they have to pay to use it.
Definitely, especially if you get a commission on the monthly fee.
Yeah, so it's like here you go, here's your new satellite radio, and here's your new monthly fee. If you pay for the monthly fee, then it's a nice feature, and they don't have to worry about it. But if you don't pay for it. I mean, it doesn't make for a great gift.
And I guess then you're looking forward to CES like I am, hopefully to see some good stuff. I'm not quite sure what we're going to see this year, though. There's no sort of big things on the horizon as sometimes there are.
There's no big bang stuff that's out there. I mean, I'm looking forward to see some of the new toys that Huawei has. I mean, a lot of the stuff they had at CES are now on the market now, and I've actually been playing around with some of them, like the Flytech Dragonfly for kids. Basically, it's a little Dragonfly flyer. It's made out of styrofoam. You can just launch into your backyard, and you control it with a remote control. And they also have the RoboSapien, which is basically a quad robot that you actually can move around with a wireless remote control. It goes on patrol around your house. It's just a nice little toy for robotics for ages like around 8 and up.
Yeah, big kids like us.
Yeah, it's good toys for the adult as well.
Yeah. Well, it's been great talking to you. We'll have to do this again because it's always fun catching up on all the stuff. And I'm sure we'll definitely see each other at CES. So we'll do an interview at CES, and that should be the next time you're on the show.
Okay, great. Well, it's great talking to you, Ian, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Stephen. It's always great fun chatting over gadgets, and I'm a real sucker for all those kind of things. The email address for the show is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. If you've got any good gadgets that you want to recommend, you can send those in. Don't forget the Facebook group and the forums. So have a great Christmas break. Don't forget, I'll be back on the 3rd of January, Thursday the 3rd of January. The Media Centre Show Awards are open until the 2nd of January. And we'll be getting ready for CES in the new year. So I'll see you back refreshed on the 3rd of January. Bye.
Thank you.